prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Tuesday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody is off today conducting other client business. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political events of the day, Tuesday, December 5, 2023. Hey, happy National Bathtub Party Day. Can you believe it? Something for everybody, which encourages all of us to skip the boring, ordinary shower and linger in the tub instead. On December 5th, it's time to add some suds to your tub and, well, pamper yourself for a change. A bathtub party sounds suspiciously like a crowded affair, but it doesn't have to be. Granted, if you have young children, it's a time saver to plunk two or three of them in the tub at once and let them go wild. Getting them all sudsed up and playing with the water toys are some of the more memorable time raising our children and grandsons. It also saves water while everyone has some good, clean fun. Alas, though, our bathroom with the tub in it is being renovated right now, so I'm going to have to rough it today in our hot tub under the early evening stars with my grandsons. Please don't hate me. Hey, let's get started with today's market report. Precious metals markets, gold recovered from earlier lows. It's actually down from its high today of 2031, but down overall $10.40, about 0.5%, just shy of $2,020. Silver also off its high of 2469, down a little over 1% today at $24.22. Platinum down about 1.75%, $16 at $910. And palladium down about a good 3.5% today, off $34 at $962. Now, that's all on a U.S. dollar index that slightly rose today, up about 0.25 percentage point to 103.96. Other commodities, natural gas up about 0.5% at 2.71, we'll call it. Domestic West Texas Intermediate oil down about 1% at $72.39 a barrel. The Treasury market, most yields were down except for the three-month, up very, very slightly. The bellwether 10-year yield down 0.11, closed about 4.18%. The two-year yield down about 0.07 at, we'll call it 4.59%. And turning to the equities, covered a little bit from where they had been. The Dow Jones finishing down about 80 points at 36,124 and change. NASDAQ, the only broader American index, up today about 44 points at 14,000, we'll call it 230. And the broader S&P 500, we'll call it flat, really, down to 2.6 points at 4,567. And that, ladies and gentlemen, does it for today's DGS Coins Market Report, brought to you again by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Well, in the news, job openings tumbled last month, in October, to their lowest in 2.5 years, a sign that the historically tight labor market could be loosening. Openings totaled 8.73 million for the month. That's a decline of 6.6%, 617,000, Labor Department reported today. That number is over 700,000 below the 9.4 million consensus estimate of analysts, and again, the lowest since March 2021. The decline in vacancies brought the ratio of openings to available workers down to 1.3 to 1. And that's a level that only a few months ago was close to 2.1. The Fed policymakers watch this report, known as the JOLTS, or the Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, for signs of labor slack. The Fed has boosted interest rates 525 basis points since March last year in an effort to slow the labor market and cool inflation, and is contemplating its next policy move as we speak. While job openings fell dramatically, total hires only nudged lower, while layoffs and separations were actually modestly higher. Quits, which are seen as a measure of worker confidence in their ability to change jobs and find another one fairly easily, were also little changed. Declines in job openings were widespread by industry. The biggest sector decline was health and education services, the fall of 238,000, followed by financial activities, 217,000, leisure and hospitality, 136,000. These are the declines again from the previous month, and retail down 102,000. The JOLTS report comes just a few days ahead of the Labor Department's all-important non-farm payrolls count for November. Got a little inkling of what lies ahead with tomorrow's ADP payrolls numbers. Now, economists polled by Dow Jones expect that jobs report to show an increase of 190,000 jobs, an uptick from October's 150,000. Have been targeting the red-hot jobs market as a specific area of concern in their battle to take inflation down from what had been a four-decade high last year. Seeing a decline in job openings likely will be welcome news to FOMC policymakers, as it could mean that less labor demand could help bring the jobs market back in line from what had been a huge mismatch with supply. The Fed holds its two-day policy meeting next week, with markets almost unanimously expecting it to leave interest rates unchanged at a range of 5.25% to 5.5%. Traders in the CME Group's Fed Funds futures market are pricing in rate cuts to to begin next March, expecting that inflation data will continue to show progress as the Fed tries to fend off a potential recession in 20. Now, hand in hand with this report comes another one. Economic activity in the service sector expanded in November for the 11th consecutive month, as the services PMI registered 52.7%. That's according to the nation's purchasing and supply executives in the latest services ISM report on business. That sector has grown in 41 of the last 42 months, with the loan contraction last December. The report issued today says, quote, the composite index indicated growth in November for the 11th consecutive month after a reading of 49.2% in December 2022, which was the first contraction since May 2020's 45.4%. The business activity index registered 55.1%, a 1 percentage point increase over October. The new orders index expanded in November for the 11th straight month after contracting in December for the first time again since May 2020. The figure of 55.5% equals the October reading. The supply deliveries index registered 49.6%. That's 2.1 percentage points higher than October. Now, this index remained in contraction territory for the second month in a row, below 50%, indicating that supplier delivery performance was actually faster in contrast to the slowing status in September. Over the last 10 months, the average reading of 48.1% reflects the fastest supplier delivery performance since June of 2009, when the index registered 46%. Now, supplier deliveries, by the way, is the only ISM index that's inversed. That is, a reading of above 50% indicates slower deliveries, and vice versa. The slower deliveries is typical as the economy improves and customer demand increases. The prices index registered 58.3 in November, down from 58.6 the month before. Here's what some respondents are saying. Restaurant sales and traffic trends continue to trend positive to pre-pandemic and last year. Opportunities across the construction industry remain strong. The labor market's skilled trades workers is tight. In finance and insurance, business conditions remain steady to the end of 2023. Annual cost escalations are a bit higher than planned, more than 5% versus 3% due to overall economic conditions and concerns. Then in healthcare, signs of recovery are on the horizon. Profit margins remain tight, but revenue is improving and labor appears to be stabilizing. And in retail trade, job candidate expectations during the hiring process have made staffing more difficult. Well, turning overseas for a moment, the rating agencies aren't just picking on the good old U.S. of A. Moody's has downgraded its outlook on China's government credit ratings to negative from stable. Excuse me. They expect Beijing support and possible bailouts for distressed local governments and state-owned enterprises to diminish China's fiscal, economic, and institutional strength. Moody's, though, did retain China's A1 long-term rating on the country's sovereign bonds, while expecting China annual GDP growth to slow to 4% next year and in 2025 and average 3.8% the rest of the decade. Now, structural factors, including weak demographics, it said, will drive a decline to 3.5% by 2030. Moody's move underscores concerns over rising debt levels and the impact of broader growth in the world's second largest economy as Beijing resorts to fiscal stimulus to support its local governments and try and rein in the spiraling debt crisis among the country's property developers.
Moody's report said, quote, the outlook change also reflects the increased risks related to structurally and persistently lower to medium-term economic growth and the ongoing downsizing of the property sector, adding, these trends underscore the increasing risks related to policy effectiveness, including the challenge to implement policies that support economic rebalancing while containing the impact on the sovereign's balance sheet. China's finance ministry expressed disappointment with Moody's downgrade decision, saying Moody's concerns about China's economic growth prospects and fiscal sustainability are unnecessary. Well, it appears that someone or something likes cryptocurrencies because its price is being propped up big time right now. Bitcoin has touched 42,000, a level not seen since May last year, before the collapse of that stablecoin called Terra USD heralded the start of the industry's meltdown. Yesterday's price surge comes largely thanks to optimism about the possibility of a Bitcoin ETF, as well as expectations for Fed rate cuts buoying riskier assets. But observers are saying this isn't just a market forces thing. A less appreciated aspect of Bitcoin's current run is what happened last month with Binance, the world's largest crypto exchange. As we know, the company and its CEO pleaded guilty to money laundering and fraud charges, agreeing to pay more than $4 billion, largest penalty in U.S. Treasury history. Among the serious charges are that Binance laundered money for terrorist groups, including Hamas. Despite the current anti-crypto atmosphere among U.S. regulators, or at least most of them, the settlement agreement inexplicably allows Binance to continue operating. But there's a catch. Under the settlement agreement, Binance is required to create an effective anti-money laundering system under the watchful eye of an independent outside party that reports to federal regulators. According to Henry Farrell and Abraham Newman in a must-read piece for the Wall Street Journal, it's the first such arrangement in crypto. And they argue it's more significant than the monetary penalty, steep as it was. They write that the new system will transform Binance from a scofflaw into a watcher and enforcer on behalf of the U.S. government. Well, that remains to be seen in my own humble opinion. The journal piece also argues the arrangement will lead to change in the larger crypto market. Any money laundering rules, it says, spread like a virus. That's because anyone who wants to do business with Binance now needs to get their house in order too. And the people doing business with those Binance users will have to adjust. U.S. did something similar about 10 years ago with a crackdown on too-big-to-fail banks, levying big fines and imposing monitoring agreements, some of which were more enforced than others. That terrified other financial institutions into rapid and widespread compliance, but not all, and just for a while. But that's another story. While the crypto market lives on, the vision of what cryptocurrency could be is very different from its early. In the Binance deal, it's hard to argue that crypto traders are operating in a decentralized wild, wild west outside of U.S. dollar hegemony. Instead, the market has drifted toward centralization, where big exchanges, including Coinbase, operate under the watchful eye of the U.S. government. Although lawbreakers could move to smaller, less centralized trading to try to avoid detection. But regulators aren't done with Binance just yet. A major lawsuit filed by the SEC is ongoing. A year ago, in the wake of Sam Bankman-Fried's downfall, the future of crypto looked uncertain. But alas, it survived and even mounted a bit of a resurgence. Go figure. Now, the remaining time we have in this segment, here's an interesting story. Researchers are flagging a suspicious surge in the short selling of Israeli stocks just days before the Hamas attacks on October 7th. We'll continue with that story after the break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Again, Melody taking care of other client business today. Call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188 or look us up on the web at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. While you're there, sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs. Let's continue with that story of short selling of Israeli stocks right before the Hamas attacks on October 7th. A new draft paper published yesterday posits that a trader or traders were informed of Hamas's plans to attack ahead of time and potentially made millions on the news. So short sellers, as we know, benefit when share prices decline, as Israeli stocks did in the aftermath of the attacks. The authors of this particular report, one of whom is a former SEC commissioner, analyzed apparent spikes in short selling of the principal Israeli company exchange-traded fund in the days leading up to the October 7th attack. The authors note that there was a similar buildup of short positions in early April, ahead of what was reportedly a Hamas plan to attack Israel on Passover, which started on April 5th. Law professors Bob Jackson Jr. of New York University and Josh Mitz of Columbia University wrote, "Our findings suggest that traders informed about the coming attacks profited from these tragic events." Now, while the paper presents a compelling case for a further investigation of what, if anything, went on, it's certainly not a slam dunk. The author's caution, quote, "We are unable to link particular market participants to the pre-attack developments we see in securities markets, to say nothing of the underlying sources of information that produced the trades we studied." Israeli security regulators reportedly say they're investigating the claims. I'll tell you, this seems too good to have been a simple coincidence. But, hey, we shall see. U.S. oil production has touched new record highs in recent weeks. American production is part of the reason that recent efforts by OPEC Plus and its strategic ally, the Plus, Russia, haven't been able to end the slide in global oil prices. Pardon me. Economic weakness in China, of course the world's largest oil importer, is dampening demand and also playing a role in the price drop. U.S. Benchmark oil prices are down nearly 20% in the fourth quarter to close to $70 a barrel now. National average price for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.24, according to AAA. That's down 5% in the last month. Now, U.S. production is up to 13.24 million barrels of crude a day, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. That's slightly higher than where we were when the so-called pandemic recession hit in March 2020. Perhaps more importantly, though, it's up 66%, or over 5 million barrels a day from the approximately 8 million barrels being produced 10 years ago. And the discovery in eastern France of a potentially mammoth cache of white hydrogen, known as one of the cleanest burning fuels in nature, has added to a trail of clues elsewhere in the world that a holy grail of clean energy may be lying in the ground for the taking. Natural hydrogen, called white hydrogen because of its purity, could be a source of clean energy continuously generated by Mother Earth. Jacques Peronin, a senior researcher and professor at the University of Lorraine, France, said, "Hydrogen is magical. When you burn it, you release water, so there are no carbon emissions. We think we've uncovered one of the largest deposits of natural hydrogen anywhere in the world." Of course, there are doubts about the exact size of this French trove and how to extract the gas and convert it to everyday use. Governments and companies alike around the world have been betting on hydrogen as a cornerstone in the fight against climate change. Agree with it or not, a multi-billion dollar industry backed by billions more in subsidies and private investments has sprung up to support the manufacturing of hydrogen in theory. It could substitute for fossil fuels to power factories, trucks, ships, planes, potentially moving around half of all planet warming emissions. But making commercial hydrogen involves splitting water into hydrogen and oxygen, an endeavor that requires energy. And if fossil fuels are used for that, the process results in greenhouse gas emissions, and the result is called gray hydrogen. Tapping renewable energy, electricity from wind turbines and solar panels to produce what's called green hydrogen is cleaner, but also more expensive. Natural hydrogen, because of its purity, could be a game changer, according to scientists, because it's a potential source of clean energy continuously generated by the Earth. Hydrogen reservoirs form when heated water meets iron-rich rocks. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, just a small fraction of these deposits could provide clean energy for 100 of years, if not more. Jeffrey Ellis, who's a geochemist at the U.S. Geological Survey and a global expert on hydrogen, said of the French finding, "If they do verify this discovery, then it is very significant and would have a big impact on society." Well, we're on to something here. back here in the States, a global exam released today shows U.S. 15-year-olds' math scores lagging way behind their peers in the world's other industrialized nations. U.S. students saw a 13-point drop in 2022 Program for International Student Assessment called PISA math results when compared to the 2018 exam. The good news, the U.S. scored above the OECD average in reading and science. Now, the 2022 PISA edition is first to take place since the pandemic. It compares the test results of roughly 700,000 students across 81 OECD member states and partner economies. Oh, gosh, excuse me. 31 countries and economies maintained or improved upon their 2018 math scores, including Switzerland and Japan. Countries that did so shared some common characteristics, like shorter school closures during the pandemic and fewer impediments to remote learning, according to the report. Students around the world have suffered historic setbacks in reading and math since COVID. The setbacks span nations rich and poor, big and small, with few making much progress. Multiple studies have highlighted the adverse and stark impact of the pandemic on education. Oh, gosh, sorry about that. Well, at least more American high schools are focusing on financial education. The latest report card from the Center for Financial Literacy at Champlain College in Burlington, Vermont, shows seven states made the top grade: Alabama, Iowa, Mississippi, Missouri, Tennessee, Utah, and Virginia. They earned an A because in those states, high school graduates in the class of 2023 are required to have taken a personal finance course before graduation. Good for them. By 2028, when new laws and policy changes are fully implemented, 23 states are projected to earn an A, according to the report. In the next 5 years, more than four out of 10 high school students will be enrolled in high schools where a personal finance course will be required before graduating. And they'll be learning lifelong lessons. John Pelletier, director of Champlain College's Center for Financial Literacy, pointedly said, "Once you graduate from high school, not a day will go by that you don't think about money, how to make it, how to spend it, how to save it. You'll be thinking about this until the day you die." Some schools and school districts have previously mandated that students receive financial education, but experts say the recent increase in the number of states that now guarantee high school students will take a financial literacy course before they graduate is, well, partly due to the pandemic. Financial fragility of many Americans, especially younger ones. Pelletier said, "You could argue the folks that need it the most are the least likely to get it unless the state requires everyone to get it." Well, studies show personal finance education can make a significant difference in young adults' financial behaviors. They improve their credit scores, lower delinquency rates on loans, reduce payday lending, and help students make better decisions about college and other loans. Meanwhile, four states, California, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and South Dakota, as well as the nation's capital, got failing grades, receiving Fs in this report because they have either none or virtually no requirements for personal finance education. Still, advocates in failing states like California are working to change the laws to ensure students are guaranteed a financial education. California resident Tim Ranzetta, who's co-founder of Next Gen Personal Finance, a financial literacy advocacy organization, said, "We all inherently know that personal finance is an impactful and easy to implement course with strong demand from both students, parents, and the general public. The momentum for guaranteeing students to receive personal finance education is gaining steam in other states as well. Wisconsin could soon become the 24th state on track to earn an A grade from the Center for Financial Literacy. This week, the governor there is expected to sign a bill requiring a personal financial literacy course for high school graduation. Include gold and silver in their discussions. Well, here's an interesting, if not outrageous, story. And European Union wealth tax and the end of capitalism in the U.S. are just some of the outrageous predictions put forward by Saxo Bank in a report published today. Heading into next year, the Danish investment bank suggested the world is at an inflection point, with the familiar road of the last decade coming to an end. Now, Saxo's predictions focus on a series of unlikely but underappreciated events that, if they were to occur, would send shockwaves across financial markets. The forecasts, though, they say, do not represent the bank's official views. Saxo Bank Chief Investment Officer Steen Jacobsen says it's all about provoking thought processes. And what I found over the last 21 years is that boards like it when they're doing forward planning. Central banks like it for the risk mitigation. And I think our clients love it because, well, it's engaging. It's like being at a good dinner table conversation and where people are pushing against each other. Well, as the EU requires more funding for its long-term policy goals, including climate change, mitigation, healthcare, education, the war in Ukraine, Saxo's head of equity strategy, Peter Garnery, suggested the bloc's leaders could implement a 2% wealth tax. Be rendered more likely if the population realizes how little in tax billionaires are actually paying. That's a speculation, he said, with social unrest frequently simmering across the Eurozone. Citing the 2024 Global Tax Evasion Report, Garnery noted the zone's vast welfare system compared to the U.S., yet the EU has 499 billionaires in U.S. dollar terms who pay the lowest personal tax and percentage of wealth compared to billionaires from North America and East Asia. Gary said billionaires in France have a pre-tax income rate on par with U.S. billionaires, despite the fact that the entire population is paying between 46% to 50% in average tax, violating the core principle of reciprocity. Gannery projected that a 2% wealth tax on EU billionaires would raise 42 billion euros, that's about $45.5 billion, toward the funding of key policy aims, while a wider 2% tax on multi-millionaires could lift this to 100 to 150 billion euros. He added the EU's modern version of Robin Hood would send shockwaves to the European luxury industry. Recent studies have shown a strong correlation between the pursuit of luxury items and levels of income and wealth inequality. But the EU Commission's new wealth tax would immediately lower market expectations for luxury goods, their demand in the future, and investors dump European luxury stocks. And Saxo, senior fixed income strategist Althea Spinozzi hypothesizes that the U.S. could be forced to further increase defense spending, while the Fed may still have to tighten U.S. monetary policy amid a second wave of inflation. To avoid social unrest, Congress could be forced to increase federal spending, sending the budget deficit above 10% of GDP, and meaning the government would have to foster increased demand for U.S. treasuries. Understanding that political stability depends upon the U.S.'s continued ability to finance huge deficits through treasury issuance, thus lowering interest rates, the government would have to increase the attractiveness of domestic bonds over stocks. Spinoza says under intense pressure from the White House, Congress could make capital gains and interest income on treasuries tax-free. And with the government debt in the hands of domestic investors, the cost of funding would become less volatile. Excuse me, Spinoza added, this dramatic move would mark the end of capitalism as money rotates from private corporations to the public. Holding riskier assets become more expensive. Well, provocative views to be sure. We'll talk more about that and other issues in the third segment, but for now, please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Don't say nay.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. For all your precious metal needs, call us, Discount Gold and Silver Trading, at 1-800-375-4188. Well, our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. It features Doug Nolan's weekly credit bubble bulletin blog and Apothecary Herb's Wendy Wilson's food for thought on the tuberculosis vaccine. Plus, I have a piece on how automakers are contributing. Excuse me. Oh, gosh, these winter colds are the pits. Plus, I have a piece on how automakers are contributing to the nation's wealth and income divide. That great divide and inequality is apparent in several facets of life in the U.S. Much of a house you can afford to buy or rent, the toll that abnormally high inflation takes on household groceries and other goods and services, the growing interpersonal distrust of institutions and each other, and much more. But one area that's taking a much bigger hit than it did just a few years ago is one that virtually all of us, regardless of income and wealth, require for our daily lives, a vehicle. And with growing calls for the manufacture of more electric and less internal combustion engine vehicles, known as EVs and ICE, respectively, this particular manifestation of inequality will only get worse. Economist Adam Ozimek said, spending $40,000 on a car seems like the kind of thing to me that you do when you have like a couple million in wealth and make $400,000 a year. But it turns out normal people do it all the time. Felix Salmon of Axios points out that just 35% of internal combustion engine vehicles sold this year have been under $40,000 and a mere 10% of EVs. In fact, those percentages were as high as around 82% for ICE vehicles and 53% for EVs as recently as 2017. Yeah, what a difference a pandemic makes, huh? Salmon further notes that the percentage of vehicles sold for over $75,000 surged from 2% of ICE autos and 12% of battery-powered EVs last year to 21% of ICE cars and 36% of EVs in 2023. Now, that's the level of inflation we can wrap our arms around. Well, if you can afford it. March this year, the average price of a new auto, $48,008, according to Kelly Blue Book. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Although that's a 3% increase from December 2022, it's about 28% higher than the 2018 average of $37,577. Median after-tax annual household income in the U.S. this year is $64,240. That's according to the Census Bureau. Kelly Blue Book found that 17 of the 23 vehicle categories showed a price increase from 2018 to 2023. But the biggest of the price leaps were for vans at 50%, luxury crossovers and SUVs at 32%, and non-luxury sedans at 30%. Of course, global microchip shortages and manufacturing delays because of COVID were among the biggest factors affecting the price of new autos. For used autos, the good news, the average price for those sold during this year's first quarter fell 6.5% to about $28,400 from $30,300 just a year earlier. The bad news, the 28.4 price is a whopping 44% higher than the 2018 average of $19,700. And complicating matters is the fact that two-thirds of the world electric vehicles are made in China. Those world leaders meet in Dubai to try and get a grip on carbon emissions. Salmon says getting a skeptical public to move from gas-powered electric vehicles is running right into a geopolitical brick wall. He posits that the best way to get more people to buy EVs is to make them more affordable to more people, thereby boosting demand. EVs are reportedly easy to find elsewhere in the world. Excuse me. Those EVs are Chinese made, and the U.S. is saying no to importing Chinese EVs. Chinese consumers had their choice of 235 different EVs in the first half of this year and paid an average $35,000 for battery-powered vehicles. Americans, on the other hand, well, we only had 51 EVs to choose from and ended up paying an average price of more than $70,000. Again, where median after-tax annual household income is just $64,000 and change. EVs are said to account for only 9% of auto sales this year in the U.S., compared with 18% in Ireland, 37% in Sweden, and 82% in Norway. But market experts say a lot of Chinese EVs are too small or flimsy for the U.S. market. Again, many aren't. They point to the four-door MG4, for example, a sporty hatchback with up to 320 miles of range, selling for an average of $38,000 in Europe. The 35,000 Volvo EX30 made in Zhangjiakou is receiving rave reviews and will actually be available in the U.S. next year. Xiamen says its manufacturer, the Volvo, Geely, will pay 27.5% tariff to break into the American market. U.S. has two competing policy goals here to keep in mind. In the climate sense, it should love the fact that China is capable of producing so many EVs a year, 36 million, a number that dwarfs North American production of just 1.2 million. From a strategic perspective, however, the U.S. is loath to the notion that Chinese imports might undercut domestic manufacturers and further damage a newer sector that's already struggling with unsold inventory. Hey, Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal notes in his blog today two striking things in the market right now. One, he says, is that we're clearly seeing an uptick in that 2021 speculative energy again. It's not just that Bitcoin is back above 40,000, and we're also seeing it in certain stocks. Wiesenthal points to the stock price movement of Affirm, one of the pioneers of the buy now, pay later model. Remember from our recent discussion on this program how data show that consumers are diving into the BNPL purchasing model with the rise of inflation and as an alternative to putting everything on their credit cards. RKK, the company is known as, is up over 42% just since late October, and it's now close to its highs of the year. The other thing Wiesenthal says about this market is still how tightly linked stocks and interest rates are. One of the key things over the last couple of years has been the emergence of a positive correlation between stocks and bonds. There's been no diversification or no risk offset. This remains the case, he observes, even with the recent decline in rates and talk of rate cuts. For example, yesterday the S&P fell over half a percentage point and the TLT long-term treasury ETF fell over 0.4%. Still in reality, when it's risk off in stocks, you're not getting a bounce in treasuries. Well, back in the zero interest rate policy era, ZIRP, when we had big risk off periods, people would literally pile into treasuries. But that's now flipped, with the Fed having moved into inflation fighting mode. At some point, Wiesenthal believes, the old pattern may start to reassert itself as the Fed put comes back sometime next year. But for now, we're just not there. Today, to paraphrase Axios's Matt Phillips, if you suffer a loss but don't have to disclose it, is it really a loss? That tongue-in-cheek question was central to the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank in March. SVB's sudden fall sparked a mini-contagion among bank depositors this past spring, during which we saw the second, third, and fourth largest bank failures in U.S. history. Last week, the FDIC released its third-quarter update on the state of the nation's bank. Not surprisingly, it said the U.S. bank system is healthy, with high and stable profits and strong scores on most kinds of outstanding loans. But the surge in interest rates over the past year and a half, which pushes down the value of fixed income securities that banks hold in large volumes, continues to inflict large paper losses. In fact, FDIC-insured banks reported unrealized losses of $684 billion in the third quarter. That's up an alarming $126 billion, or 23% from $558 billion. In Q2. Now, an unrealized loss is really the difference between the price a bank paid for bonds in their investment portfolio and the current market price for those securities. Under generally accepted accounting principle, banks don't have to actually report those losses on their balance sheets unless and until they sell the bonds. That's basically what happened to SVB when it needed to raise cash in March, leading to its collapse and the run on deposits and subsequent demise of Silvergate and Signature Banks. The Fed rolled out new programs after these regional banks failed to significantly reduce the risk that similar unrealized losses would lead to more bank collapses. But as Pam and Russ Martins reported in a late September edition of their Wall Street on Parade newsletter, unrealized losses on too-big-to-fail banks' balance sheets could be a much bigger problem than we've been led to believe. Adding to the financial stress of the nation's 25 largest banks, the Martins point out their deposits as of late September have fallen by $920 billion since April last year. Now, part of that's undoubtedly because of higher interest rates offered by shorter-term treasuries and some smaller banks. But a chunk of it, too, stems from protracted depositor concerns and fears caused by the bank failures. Now, under another even more contentious GAAP rule, accounting rule, held to maturity, or HTM debt, instruments are not marked to market or shown on a bank's balance sheet at their current fair value. In fact, CPA, CFA Sandra Peters calls it the hold till maturity rule. Instead, as the Martins note in their September 25th newsletter, they're listed at amortized cost. That's effectively what was paid for a specific debt instrument at the time of its purchase, even if its current market value is 10, 20, 30, or more percent below its original purchase price. The Martins say the HTM accounting treatment lets banks create an illusion on their balance sheet as to what their assets are actually worth. What's more, the bigger the dollar amounts held as HTM investment securities, the bigger the illusion. Yes, fair market value for HTM securities and unrealized losses are provided in company supplemental charts in SEC filings, but it's not reflected in the asset value on the balance sheet itself, leaving all but the most informed shareholders and taxpayers clueless, purely clueless, about a given bank's assets' actual market value at a given time. The Martins report that J.P. Morgan Chase, the largest bank in the U.S., has transferred huge amounts of securities into the HTM category. According to Chase's 10-K for the period ending December 21, 2022, it was holding just $425.3 billion in HTM securities that actually have a fair market value of just $388.6 billion. Or an unrealized loss of just shy of $37 billion. As of June 30th, Bank of America, the second largest U.S. bank, had a 17% loss on its HTM securities versus 8.2% at J.P. Morgan Chase and 9.3% at Citibank. Hey, you remember Citibank, the too-big-to-fail bank that literally imploded in 2008 and ended up as a 99-cent stock a year later? Yeah. Before that is, it got a secret $1.2 trillion bailout from the Fed to prevent its potential failure. Well, this is just another example of the failure of the Federal Reserve, the OCC, the FDIC, and the Congress to properly supervise the nation's banks on behalf of the American taxpayers, who would once again be on the hook for yet another massive bailout. You know, they are called too big to fail for a reason. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there and have a good evening. Bye-bye.